Well, good morning, everybody. I'm really delighted to be here, and I appreciate your invitation and Marshall's invitation to join with you this morning. It was very what a wonderful surprise it was yesterday to receive a text from Jennifer Hayes. It turns out that we share some people that we love very much. Jennifer and Michael are the aunt and uncle of my daughter-in-law, Johanna, and so it's nice to see you both again and be here worshiping with you this morning, be worshiping with all of you this morning. Now, on each coin in your pocket, and on the banners flowing from the eagle on the back of the dollar bill, is the motto adopted in 1782 from the Great Seal of the United States, E Pluribus Unum, out of the many, one. Marshall has given me this assignment, and I'm so glad he did because this is something that is very near and dear to my heart. He gave me this assignment. How do we create an unum? How do we create a one out of this new multiracial, multicultural many, out of this multi-religious, pluribus world? How do we do that? More pointed, how can a small but vibrant Mennonite congregation in southeast Fort Wayne engage in the ministry of Christ with a predominantly immigrant Burmese, Muslim, and Buddhist population in the neighborhood? That's the assignment. I hope that you share in asking me that because that's what I'm going to talk about. First of all, I really commend you for even asking the question. You'd be surprised how many churches don't ask how they can be engaged with their neighbors of different races, different cultures, different creeds, different religious traditions. The vast majority don't even ask the question. So just asking the question puts you ahead of many churches. Cultural, racial, economic, and religious diversity is an American reality. Historically, one of the great strengths of this nation of immigrants, as you know, and as you also know, it's a topic that's critically more important than ever, given the recent election. And Allen County ranks in the top 20 nationwide in the number of languages and dialects spoken here, more than 80 according to the most recent census. 80 different languages and dialects spoken in Allen County. There are no rules for what you want to do. I mean, I wish I could hand you a prescription. There aren't any rules. You're creating the rules as you go. But you're on the front line. You're on the front lines of something new and potentially very exciting for the ministry of Christ in this area. So for churches like yours, the old understandings, the way I grew up, you know, about mission and evangelism and what those meant, they don't work anymore. They just don't work anymore. Which means the old ways you've done things, even cherished ways, all need to be reevaluated in this new context because some of the old ways just aren't appropriate. Just aren't appropriate anymore. The questions, how do we engage with people of different faiths, specifically here, our Muslim and Buddhist neighbors, while at the same time respecting our Christian faith, as well as the American value of religious diversity, especially after this last national election, this question will help to determine our future as a nation, but more importantly, our future as a church. It's precisely because religion is not something about which we all agree. And religion, or lack of religion, is a very personal business that one of the central values of the founders of America was religious freedom. Was religious freedom. That our common American community was based in religious pluralism, which meant that we not only tolerate other practices and beliefs, like we might tolerate, you know, old crazy Uncle George, you know, in the family. No, we don't just tolerate, but that we guard our neighbor's right to believe or not believe, and that we respectfully engage with them in a common cause and with a common identity and seek a common constructive understanding of who we all are as American citizens. We can do that. And we can do that as Christians. Pluralism is not relativism, and it's not just mere tolerance, but it's finding a common cause with people with different understandings and finding a place where we can stand together. This is not America 101, our church 101. This is graduate work in American citizenship, and it's graduate work in church. One of the things that our founders understood was that Christianity itself isn't uniform, even less so today. I mean, Christians can't even agree among themselves what it means to be a Christian. And consider, too, not only the theological differences, but also the great cultural differences among Christian churches just here in this town. Besides the mainline denominations, I go to Plymouth Church downtown. My friend Joan goes to First Presbyterian Church downtown, part of the mainline. We have, for example, Korean Baptists and Korean Presbyterians, Hispanic Catholics and United Church of Christ Hispanics, African American independent churches, white suburban non-denominational mega churches that extol the military and worship the flag, small Mennonite historic peace churches, Vietnamese Catholics, the Amish, and the Church of the Open Door that ministers to gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered peoples. Now you tell me, which of these would all feel comfortable with each other in the same worship space? Christianity is not uniform, and it's even less so today. Multicultural, multiracial, multireligious. The second thing that the founders understood is that democracy and freedom are not static realities, but dynamic ones. That the American dream is still being negotiated. We have to create this American dream for a new day and a new generation who are helping to reshape and redefine what the American dream means for them. My great-grandparents came over as German immigrants. And you know what? I'm very close to the folks down at the Islamic Society of North America outside of Indianapolis in Plainfield. My great-grandparents had to decide, were they going to worship and teach their kids, send them to schools to learn German or English? You know, our Muslim immigrant friends are doing the same thing. They're worried about education and health care and all the things that my ancestors worried about when they came over three generations ago. You were a stranger and you welcomed me. You were a stranger. You were a stranger and you were welcomed. Our ancestors, you know, when I was in college, I took an interfaith dialogue class. We were studying different world's religions. And the topic was, here was the title of the class, Jew, Christian, and Muslim. That was it. And I'm not that old. Today, I mean, our ancestors could hardly even imagine the immigration in the last 40 or 50 years of Muslims from all around the world and Sikhs who wear turbans and Jains who are committed absolutely to nonviolence, and Hindus, and Buddhists, and Baha'is, and the growth of humanism, and those who consider themselves none of the above. You know, in the last survey by the Pew Research Poll, The percentage of people in the United States who consider themselves none of the above, the so-called nones, 23% of the American population. 23%, almost a quarter, consider themselves maybe what we might call spiritual, but not religious. None of the above. In other words, here, Fort Wayne is no longer the city of churches, but rather the city of faiths and no faith at all. And what's exciting is that all these people of faith and people of goodwill can work together. We can work together for the common good. The common good. Well, that's the setting. And I'm really eager to continue this conversation after church with you all. But what might this mean? What might this mean for you and your ministry here with your Muslim and Buddhist immigrant neighbors? One, as Anabaptists, Mennonites who know what it means to be a persecuted religion, a persecuted religious minority historically, you have a special sensitivity to the immigrant and other minority religious traditions. The last thing you want to do is to become part of the establishment that had formerly persecuted you, now finding another minority to persecute in your place. That's the last thing you want to do. Number two, I participated in interreligious dialogues on the national and international level with Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews, Sikhs, and humanists in my professional career. One of the core rules for our work together is to not begin by focusing on our theological differences, not begin on focusing on doctrines, where we differ in terms of belief, but begin with shared values. Not beliefs, but values. What are the values we share together? See, again, I'll say religious pluralism is not mere tolerance, but the conviction that people of different creeds can live together. We can affirm different religious beliefs while making a mutual commitment to common American values. Respect for diversity. The building of relationships of trust and loyalty. Common action. Common service for common good. Mutual respect. If you begin with doctrines or beliefs, you can walk about this far along the road together, if that's what you're going to focus on. Because it becomes pretty apparent early on that you and your Muslim friends or your Buddhist friends or any of your friends of another tradition are going to be different than you, going to believe different than you. But if you begin with shared values, you can walk this far together, and maybe, as you get to know each other, even farther. Number three, as you and your new friends of different faiths begin to know each other, as you grow together as friends, and as you build trust, almost organically, this is what happens. You begin to seek out not where you differ from each other in terms of your faith, but the commonalities that you share. Because now you're invested in them as a fellow human being and as a friend. The differences don't get in the way of friendships and working together for the common good. Four. For example, regarding your Muslim neighbors. Did you know that almost 10 years ago, October 2007, I was present when this document was sent out from Jordan. Muslim scholars, teachers, and imams from all over the world and from every Islamic theological understanding, Shias, Sunnis, Sufis, and all the different theological schools within Islam, produced an open letter to all Christians and Christian churches around the world entitled A Common Word. Google it. A Common Word. And what is this common word that these Muslims say that they and Christians share? What's the common word that they say is based in the Quran and based in the Bible? It's this. The commandment to love only God and to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, my gosh, if you start there, you can walk a pretty long way together. To love only God and to love your neighbor as yourself. Start there with your Muslim friends and the other common values you share. And regarding your Buddhist neighbors, did you realize that this coming Wednesday, February 15th, is one of Buddhism's most important holy days, Nirvana Day, when the Buddha's earthly life ended and he achieved what they call Parinirvana. Did you realize that the Dalai Lama gives lectures on the Beatitudes of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the peacemakers. Did you realize that the Dalai Lama also says that Buddhists and Christians share the same ideals and the same values? And as Mennonites, you share with Buddhists a commitment to nonviolence, a dying to the ego, to the self, and compassion for all living things. These are shared values you have with your Buddhist neighbors. And six, so as Mennonites, as you seek to dialogue with your neighbors, your history has given witness to the following truth. God is defined by Jesus, but God is not confined to Jesus. God is defined by Jesus, but God is not confined to Jesus. You think about that. And think about the implications of that. And finally, I would encourage you to do the following. I know, and maybe you've already done this, so forgive me, I'm new here. Don't be shy in reaching out to your neighbors. Invite them over. Respectfully go to their places of worship and introduce yourselves and attend their prayers or their meditation. Go to the neighboring Burmese mosque on Settlemyre on a Friday about 1:30 and sit and observe and pray with them and introduce yourself and say that you want to get to know them. Or any of the Buddhist temples on Decatur Road or down on Wayne Trace. Bhante Devananda on Wayne Trace is a good friend of mine. Monday evening meditation, Thursday evening meditation. Show them you care, especially now they want to know that they fit in. Remember, they're the immigrants. They're the immigrants, and they need to know that there's a place for them to fit in this community. Particularly with our Muslim friends, it's more important than ever. And by the way, forgive me for being so blunt, but don't tell me that, well, you're just a small congregation. Small church, big impact. That's the mantra. Because small church can have big impact when there's big love. When there's big caring. When there's big respect. When you've got a big Jesus. Small church, big Jesus. Small church, big impact. I don't know if I should be that blunt when I just am a new guy here. Another way you might be able to help is through the East Allen University on Wayne Trace, one of the state's few dual credit schools. It's a place where students can earn their high school diploma and an associate's degree, around 60 college credits in a 4-year period. Now, I don't know much about the school, but I do know that according to Principal Doug Hicks, Burmese refugees account for around 20% of the student population, and they're among his best students. Figure out a way that you could fit in there with your ministry. Or in last Sunday's Journal Gazette, the lead story in the Metro section was about a guy named Regis Rashid, himself a Muslim Burmese refugee who's working with a realty company in town to build homes and a new housing development for Burmese refugee families on Settlemyer Avenue. How can your church be a part of this exciting new venture in your neighborhood? Even if it's just being a welcome wagon for people who move into town or move into the neighborhood, and you take them a crock pot full of chili. Small church, big Jesus, big impact. Because there's big love. Well, these just are off the top of my head. You know best, because you're here, you know best of what you can do and what's possible and how you can be neighbors. You're the experts on how you can do that. I'll simply end by saying once again that I really respect the fact that you're even asking this question, because most churches don't. And I'll repeat that your Mennonite Anabaptist tradition thrusts you outward into the world. Outward into the world of this interreligious dialogue with a sensitivity to the persecuted and marginalized, because historically Mennonites have been persecuted and marginalized. There are no boundaries. There are no boundaries with this big Jesus. There are no boundaries with this big love. The only boundaries are the ones that we place upon ourselves. God is defined by Jesus, but not confined to Jesus. And finally, if you begin by focusing not on doctrines, but on shared values, you can begin with your common commitment to this neighborhood. These new immigrant families, non-churched, Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, you've got a common commitment to this neighborhood, to your well-being, to your life here, to your children and grandchildren here. Your shared values, hospitality, an open table, care for the earth, nonviolence and peace, the commandments to love God and the neighbor, living lives of holiness and compassion. Those are the shared values that you have with all these neighbors. All these neighbors, no matter what religious faith. You can fulfill the ideals of E Pluribus Unum, out of the many, one. You can make new friends, and you will make all the difference in the world. Small church, big Jesus, big impact, because there's big love. Amen. I've been asked to give the blessing, and I thought I would give the blessing from... I spent some time with the Dalai Lama back in 1994 in St. Louis. I was part of a group called Friends of Tibet, and I was one of the founders of St. Louis Interreligious Dialogue, and we invited His Holiness the Dalai Lama to come to St. Louis, and he did, and I spent about a day and a half with him and his entourage as one of his hosts. And this is his favorite blessing, his favorite prayer, the one that he quotes from the 8th century saint, Buddhist saint Shantideva. And so it goes like this. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a medicine for those who are ill, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. Amen.